Welcome to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Steve Vaughn also with me. Homeschool fathers, coming to you from my studio out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Friends, we live in a brave new world of sorts. No, it's actually a messed up, depraved old world. That's really what it is. This isn't a brave new world. We're just repeating some of the old sins that have been extant for thousands upon thousands of years. But things have changed in the sense that science lends something of a credibility to what man is doing in the modern techno post-Christian age of the 21st century. Now, here's a scientific study, Steve, where scientists paid dozens of Mexican women to be hyperstimulated with hormones to dangerous levels. In other words, they would risk their lives. And then they were artificially inseminated, and then they aborted the babies that were conceived in these women, and then they wanted to prove that this method produced healthier babies than would normally be produced through regular methods of artificial insemination. The kicker comes in with the purpose of the study, though. Apparently, this method would allow doctors who artificially inseminate to remove the conceived babies, then analyze them for genetic defects and destroy the babies who bear the genetic defects, and then also to allow, say, a lesbian to conceive and another lesbian to carry the child. So you talk about, you know, bringing all the Frankensteinian elements of the modern world together. This by the way, they paid the Mexican women $1,500 for this, but I just don't think it can get much nastier than that. You know, forcing them to artificial insemination, aborting the babies, and then doing it for the sake of eugenics. Because this is eugenics. That's what it is. It's just a form of eugenics. This is nothing more or less than what Galton and all of the eugenicists of the early 20th century were trying to do. They're doing this, and also to support the homosexual movement of the present generation.
Words escape me on this. I listened to all of the words that you said, and I'm sitting here trying to process it as a registered nurse, and it's just not processing in my head very well.
Welcome to the world of Frankenstein and Mengele. Remember the Third Reich? This is the Third Reich all over again. These scientists are very well-educated, civilized cannibals. They're cultured cannibals. I think that's what you need to understand about the present world. These are cannibals in suits. Right, I mean, these are guys who appear to have some culture and some I don't know, place in society, some civilization about them, but they are as immoral, they are as degraded as the cannibals of the South Seas in the 1870s. And I think that's the thing that people need to understand. Sometimes when people see a scientist, they meet a scientist with PhD after their name, in the white coat coming out of the laboratory, they just assume that these guys are, you know, cultured, civilized, moral people. But we live in an age of highly cultured, erudite cannibals. That's where we are today. This is the Third Reich. These are the Nazi doctors, just respawn in the 21st century. And really a representation of the pre-flood monsters called the Nephilim. Do you remember the Nephilim prior to the flood, where they seemed to have a certain amount of culture about them, but they used their academic prowess. They used that culture. They used that development of their academic know-how or their abilities to control massive civilizations to bring about great murderous destruction upon the earth. And this is the kind of thing that I think we've seen, Steve, over the last 100 years. It wasn't just these doctors of the 21st century. It was the Mengeles. It was the Margaret Sangers. It was the Charles Darwins of the world. It was the Galtons of the world. These guys were monsters, truly monsters.
Yes.
But they were able to cultivate a great deal of respect because of their high culture and their apparent academic success.
It's really just the dehumanization of people. We're just, you know, like Romans 8, you know, we're sheep to be slaughtered. It's just whatever... Whatever we need, you know, today, we want to find this out. Well, we've got people, we've got Latino Americans, we've got African Americans, we've got Latinos, we've got people all over the place. We can just experiment on them because, I mean, what are humans? They're nothing. I mean, that's really what's going on.
Well, what you're referring to is the experimentation on the Mexican women. That itself was another form of abuse. I think this is just unconscionable, this kind of immoral behavior on the part of modern scientists, unconscionable, friends. And I think somebody needs to protest it. Somebody needs to stand up and say, this is just wrong. There needs to be a John the Baptist or a Noah, a preacher of righteousness somewhere to stand up and say, this is wrong. And I know these voices are few and far between these days, but we need to do this. What happens, I think, is people give the impression that the scientists know what they're doing. But the real root issue here is there is no fear of God before their eyes. You get down to the real reason why the Mengeles, why the Frankensteins, why these doctors performing experiments on Mexican women. Friends, there is no fear of God before their eyes. That's the issue. There is no respect of human life created in the image of God. They're just looking at it as somewhat advanced cosmic dust floating around a universe of pure chance, and who cares? There's no possibility for morality when we're all just cosmic dust. Sometimes a little more highly evolved, perhaps, at least for the time being, until we devolve into less advanced forms of cosmic dust. That's exactly what these guys are thinking. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace they have not known. The assumption, of course, is that science is neutral, but it's not. And we're going to deal with that next on the Generations broadcast. This may be the most important little conference in the year 2020. Folks, we are facing the largest worldwide multinational persecution in the history of the Christian church right now. Christian families, let's introduce our children to the Christian life, because it is through much tribulation that we shall enter the kingdom of God. Now, this conference is to be held in Victoria, Texas, and it will increase awareness of the persecuted body of Christ. Space is very limited, but registration is free. By the way, the first 30 registrants will receive a copy of Taking the World for Jesus. Register today at SouthTexasBibleConference.com. That's SouthTexasBibleConference.com. And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson here, Steve Vaughn also with you. Actually, both scientists, myself a mechanical engineer, and Steve Vaughn comes from a biological background, nursing background. So both of us educated in higher learning. But here's the point I think needs to be made from the outset. Don't trust us as scientists. You know, don't trust scientists. Yeah. Don't trust the engineers. You know, don't trust. The way in which science is taught, science is not neutral. Some people think that engineering and science are safe measures in college. You know, liberal arts is liberal. Everybody knows that. You know, the liberal arts professors, it's always, you know, like a 25-1 ratio on Democrats to Republicans. Liberal arts majors, and we know that. We know that. That's been the point of the spear when it comes to the apostasy in the West. So, yeah, liberal arts is liberal. These are the liberal guys. These are the guys that are leading the apostasy in the Western world. So we know that. But engineering, science, just about as dangerous. Why? Because of pride, because of autonomy, because of lack of fear of God that just oozes out of white-collar engineering and science, especially in the university. So, friends, we have to be cautious with these things. The sheer arrogance with scientists is demonstrated by the almost total lack of worship in the chemistry classrooms, in the chemistry laboratories, in universities. They just won't worship the Creator. They refuse to worship the Creator. You show me a chemistry laboratory where the professors in these chemistry classrooms are on their knees before God, raising their arms and singing "How Great Thou Art." You show me where the fear of God and the worship of God is happening. I'm sure there's got to be a college somewhere, probably in another country. But friends, the sheer arrogance of scientists is outrageous. This incipient lack of wonder and worship in the chemistry classrooms, it's outrageous. It's terrible. It's probably the worst aspect of modern life. Psalm 111, we like to come back to that again and again. The works of the Lord are great, studied by all who have pleasure in them. That is, when you see that the author is God, the Lord himself has made these things for us. We take delight in them, and we respond in wonder and worship. That's key in science. Otherwise, friends, you have no business studying science. The sheer arrogance with scientists is also seen in their incipient incapability of moderating their dogmatism on scientific conclusions. So very, very sure that fish turned into birds and the inanimate turned into the animate by processes that have never been repeated, never been produced in a laboratory, mechanisms never been adequately described, and yet it happened. And they apply the same level of dogmatism to that as the dogmatism they apply to the law of physics relating to gravity, M1, M2, G over R squared. That principle has been established by dropping an object 100,000 times and concluding with 99.999% probability that gravity exists. Now, we have reason to be certain about that. But then there's all this certainty that makes its way into 99.9999% of university instruction, into all the museums, and they're so sure that fish turned into birds and the inanimate turned into the animate by some process that's never been described, but they're sure of it. They're really, really, really sure of it, and they're going to push it down our throats. Well, friends, that's what I'm talking about, the irrationality of modern science. They're just blubbering fools. That's what they've turned into. They're so very, very sure that global warming is caused by human sources, not even considering that the sun produces 10 million times more energy than man-made systems. The sun produces 400 times 10 to the 18 watts versus 15 times 10 to the 12 watts produced by man's systems. In other words, the sun produces 10 million times the energy of man-made systems. And yet, for some reason, they're insisting that it was man-made systems that increased the global temperature by, what, 3/4 degree in the last 70 years or whatever it was. That's ridiculous, friends. The scientists are irrational. They become irrational, blubbering fools because they cannot moderate their dogmatism because they are sheer arrogance. They truly believe that man is in control of the universe, or should be. There's no fear of God before their eyes. So I'm not going to trust them. Of course I'm not going to trust them. And you should not trust them either. If there's no fear of God in that classroom, in that professor, don't trust what he has to say. Period. The sheer arrogance of scientists comes in when they don't even think of God's laws. They don't teach God's laws. They don't consider God's laws as they develop their Frankensteinian experiments.
It reminds me so much of Romans 1. They've chosen to worship the things rather than the creator, and God has given them over. That's why they've become fools.
Yeah, and I think we need to come back to the root problem again and again. Right, they've ignored God. They were not thankful. That's also mentioned there in Romans 1. And there's no fear of God before their eyes. That's Romans 3. So that's the root issue. Let's get down to the root issue. There's no fear of God before their eyes. You know, ask them. Ask your professor in your university, do you fear God? Just simply ask him. It's easy to do. And then if he says, no, I don't fear God, then don't trust him. And here's the other thing, Steve. I think we need to bring it into the Christian homeschool as well. The most commonly used chemistry textbook for Christian homeschools. It's just not a lot of fear of God. I don't see any praise for God, no worship. I just don't see it in the textbooks. We're in desperate need of reformation of science among Christian homeschools. I mean, we need this so desperately. And we're just starting to produce this as part of the Generations Ministry. We started with a 6th grade God Made Animals zoology textbook. And friends, it's available at our website, generations.org. Just the beginning. Might be just something to add to what you already have, but I encourage you to start incorporating a God-fearing curriculum that really has the fear of God, the worship of God on every page, just referring to the wondrous works of God so that students don't forget about it from page to page. Be sure that your curriculum includes that frontlet before our eyes, that frontlet where it's always there. It's right there on the posts, on the gates, everywhere. We're seeing a reference to God's word everywhere, all around us. You don't separate the education from the discipleship of your children. Well, let me end the program here, Steve, with two stories that I think are indicative of the collapse of our scientific world. Certainly, we're seeing that affect the values of a nation. Back in November, like 2 months ago, President Trump signed the Animal Cruelty Act, in which if a guy willfully or purposefully crushes, drowns, suffocates, impales, or otherwise subjects to serious bodily damage living non-human mammals, birds, reptiles, or amphibians, he gets 7 years in prison. Can you believe that? 7 years in prison. And it doesn't even kill.
That seems about right.
It doesn't even kill the animal. Subjects an animal to serious bodily damage. So if your 8-year-old kid subjects a lizard to serious bodily damage, does that involve, you know, snipping off its tail or something like that? Some 8-year-old kid subjects throws a lizard into the water. He gets 7 years in prison.
Now this is pretty equitable.
Patently unjust. Unbiblical, according to biblical standards of justice, if anybody cares anymore about what God thinks. But the hypocrisy of the federal government is breathtaking on this one, Steve. Just breathtaking. They won't even think about prosecuting Planned Parenthood for crushing, drowning, suffocating, impaling, and otherwise subjecting to serious bodily damage 350,000 babies a year, and then allegedly selling off their body parts. See, just not getting this is the height of hypocrisy. I'm not sure we have seen this level of hypocrisy with our federal government, Democratic and Republican, in history. This is just breathtaking. It's overwhelming to think about how that, you know, throw an 8-year-old kid in prison for 7 years if he. And granted, it's, you know, the Bible says you take care of your animals and you don't, you know, the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. The Bible does say that. But the Bible does not assign 7 years in prison for doing damage to a lizard.
Yeah, it appears to me that God's given them over, and what's happened is that they've turned creation, the order of creation, upside down to where man is the least of all creation and all of these animals are the greatest of all creation. And that's exactly the opposite of what God has set up, that we are the pinnacle of creation. We are to get a grasp on what God made because we can see God and his handiwork in everything that he made, which causes us or should cause us to worship him. And they've turned it all upside down to where man is the least of them all. We can do whatever we want to them, but you know, you sure better not, you know, snip off the tail of a lizard.
Well, it's degrading, you know, humans. It's degrading humans made in the image of God. That's what man is doing, shaking a fist in the face of God and rejecting his laws. I think it really comes down to that, is that Christian churches need to teach God's laws in relation to animal cruelty, in relation to human life, in relation to the use of abortifacients, in relation to the use of abortion. There needs to be at least some sense of righteousness. There needs to be some interest in righteousness, hungering and thirsting after righteousness among Christians. That would be a good start. But here's another thing. Talk about cruelty. We talk about 350,000 babies slaughtered by Planned Parenthood in any given year, plus, you know, all of the children slaughtered by the use of abortifacients, plus the other 600,000 babies killed by other abortion clinics across America in any given year. But talk about cruelty. Here's an article from the Christian Post, where there's a new study that's been done on fetal pain, that is, unborn babies feeling pain, now as early as 12 weeks into the pregnancy. See, for years and years, it was 24 weeks. It was always, oh, don't worry about the kids who are slaughtered in the first and second trimester. No, they're not feeling any pain. Well, now what we're seeing is unborn babies feel pain as early as 12 weeks into pregnancy. Reports often suggest, this is from the Journal of Medical Ethics, published earlier this month, apparently was done by the National University of Singapore and the Connor Troop Medical Clinic of Fort Drum, New York. The article is entitled Reconsidering Fetal Pain. And these guys say reports often suggest that the cortex, intact thalamocortical tracts are necessary for pain experience, given that the cortex only becomes functional and the tracts only develop after 24 weeks. Many reports rule out fetal pain until the final trimester. However, more recent evidence calling into question the necessity of the cortex for pain and demonstrating functional thalamic connectivity into the subplate is used to argue that neuroscience cannot definitively rule out fetal pain before 24 weeks. Overall, the evidence and a balanced reading of that evidence points towards an immediate and unreflective pain experience mediated by the developing function of the nervous system from as early as 12 weeks. That was the conclusion of the study. It was done by these researchers, these scientists who were both pro-life and pro-abortion. So it was a mix. So here we've had babies, what, 80 million babies? I can't remember how many babies have been slaughtered in America, let alone the world. I think it's been over a billion babies worldwide slaughtered in the last 40 to 50 years. We've been told that it's only 1% of babies aborted after 20 weeks that feel any pain. Well, it turns out 10% of the babies are aborted between 12 and 20 weeks. So whereas we were told, hey, only 1% of the babies, only 10,000 babies feel pain in the abortion. So Roe v. Wade's great because, you know, out of the million plus babies slaughtered in America over any given year, only 10,000 of them feel pain. That itself wasn't a very good argument. You know, the rest of us weren't convinced, you know. Imagine that. Imagine saying, you know, we are going to torture 10,000 Jews or 10,000 Hispanic women in America, only 10,000. We're going to torture them to death. So no big deal. The other million we're killing are not going to feel the pain. 10,000 of them will feel the pain. Hardly an argument that would convince anybody with even a modicum of a standard of justice or morality in their mind. And yet that apparently was convincing to enough people to allow for abortion through the third trimester for the last 40, 50 years. Okay, so 1% of the babies aborted after 20 weeks. They said only 10,000 babies feel pain. But now, with this scientific research coming out, it turns out that 110,000 babies feel pain in their abortion in any given year. So, yeah, it was, you know, 10 times what we thought it was. So, sorry about that. I guess the question that we need to ask is, what does God feel? How does God feel? Not so much what do the babies feel, but how does God feel when his image is trashed like this in abortion clinics across America? How does God feel about this? I think we need to come back to, is there any fear of God before our eyes? Do we ever really want to know what God's perspective is about the use of abortifacients? It doesn't matter if the baby is a couple of cells or if he's in the seventh trimester and he's, you know, 6 inches long. It doesn't really matter. He's still made in the image of God, and God does not want the baby murdered. He doesn't want his image trashed and a baby murdered. The blood of the innocents do cry out to God, and he brings vengeance upon nations that will shed innocent blood to this extent. We certainly find that in the Old Testament, and I think he would feel the same way today as well. It's not as if God has come to the point at which he doesn't care so much about the slaughter of the innocents in these countries. What tremendous hypocrisy, friends. We're concerned when somebody drowns a mammal rat or cuts off a lizard tail. He gets 7 years in a federal prison thanks to Trump's signing the animal cruelty bill. But Planned Parenthood can torture 350,000 babies to death, 40,000 of which feel pain every year, and it's no big deal. They still get 37% of their funding from federal and state funding sources from the taxpayers. So that's the kind of country we live in today. That's the kind of system that we accept. This is the kind of jurisprudence that we endorse as we elect our Republican representatives for Congress. As Christians, friends, we need to hunger and thirst after righteousness. We need to hate these injustices. What does he require of you, O man, but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly before your God? And that applies to scientists as well as politicians, friends. We as those who have come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, we need to share his commitment to righteousness. Read Psalm 45. Read Psalm 110. What does Jesus say when it comes to righteousness? He fights for it. He loves righteousness. He would die for righteousness. In fact, that's what he did. And so we ourselves need to hunger and thirst after righteousness. Let us, as Christians, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly before our God. And do so by the voting booth. Do so by every opportunity that you get to stand for righteousness in the public forum. Do so with your own podcasts. Come on, we need 100,000 podcasts, not just this tiny little podcast from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. We need others to take a stand for righteousness in their local communities as well. Let's love justice. Let's embrace mercy and walk humbly before our God in our generation as well. Though that wraps up this edition of the Generations Radio Broadcast, I encourage you to my book, The Story of Freedom, which outlines a Christian perspective concerning embracing righteousness in the public forum. It's called The Story of Freedom. It's available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.